Good morning, and thanks for tuning in today for Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. My name is Chris McElyea. I'm your host on Mornings for the Master each Thursday, and I want to thank you for being with us this morning, and I hope you'll stick around for the next few minutes as we spend this time in God's Word and get our day moving in the right direction. Mornings for the Master can be heard each weekday at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time here on TGRN. The programs are replayed in the evenings at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and they are posted in the on-demand section of the Gospel Radio Network website within a day or two. And so I hope you avail yourselves to these programs. Mornings for the Master has a different host and a different course of study each day of the week. And so, you have plenty of opportunities for this daily time of study. Now here on our Thursday programs, for some time now we have been studying the book of John. And we are into the latter parts of this study. And today, we are going to be considering chapter 18. So stick with me, and let's begin this study that now at this time. Let's go through the chapter here. As the scene now moves in chapter 18 to the Garden of Gethsemane. Chapter 18, verse 1. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Then he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke of, 'Those whom you gave me, I have lost none.'" Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest, and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl, who kept the door, said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and I in the temple, where the Jews always meet. And in secret, I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you." Then Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." Therefore the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death," that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priest have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. Pilate therefore said to him, Are you a king then? Jesus answered, You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, What is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews? Then they all cried again, saying, Not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. The purpose of John's gospel is to bring his readers to a true saving faith. Recall chapter 20 and verses 30 and 31. And truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. John now brings us to the pinnacle of the gospel, the arrest, the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. John is not recounting the story of Jesus. Many scholars believe that when John penned this book, that the other three Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke were already in existence and were already in circulation at the time that he penned his gospel. Recall that he was probably the only apostle still alive at this point. The gospel is not for us to simply recount the death and the resurrection of Jesus, but our brother John will present Jesus to us as the glorious Son of God, the one in whom we must put our complete hope and our faith. And that is what we see here in John chapter 18. We see, as Jesus said, that the kingdom of Jesus is not of this world. So now as we begin to go through the chapter again, the scene begins as they go to the Garden of Gethsemane, and we find the arrest of Jesus. We go back to verse 1. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said this to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Then he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, 'Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none.'" Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" As chapter 18 begins, the fact is immediately impressed upon us that Jesus now is making no effort to avoid his impending arrest. After Jesus had prayed for his disciples and the glory of God in chapter 17, Jesus goes to a garden. It is a place where he and the disciples had often met. Judas would certainly have known where this place was and that Jesus was likely to go there. Jesus did not attempt to change the location of the meeting in order to avoid his arrest. And so Jesus leads his disciples to the very place where Judas can lead his band of followers. Now, one could notice the massive group that Judas leads. It says he has a band of soldiers and some officers sent by the chief priest and the Pharisees. And notice that they are carrying lanterns and torches and weapons. It would seem to have the appearance of a lynch mob. It is a large number of people coming for Jesus. It's really quite interesting to consider the picture here of this huge band of people with torches and weapons coming to arrest a peaceful preaching miracle worker. Now notice verse 4. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" We understand here that nothing that is going to happen is any surprise to Jesus. Jesus has complete divine foreknowledge of what is about to take place, both now and in the coming days. There is nothing going on that is out of his control. We need to recall what Jesus had told his disciples back in chapter 10 and verses 17 and 18. Therefore, my Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This command I have received from my Father. Jesus knew full well what was going on. Also, recall what he said in chapter 12 and verse 27. Now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this purpose I came to this hour. Jesus, from the very beginning, knew this was his destiny. As a song we sometimes sing, 'twas a lonely hill of Golgotha. Knowing his destiny, there he lay down his life for me. The apostles would also later preach this very same truth. Even on the day of Pentecost, when the gospel would be proclaimed for the first time, consider the words of Peter in Acts chapter 2 and verse 23. Him, being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death. To show that he has power over this situation, now notice what happens next. Jesus steps forward towards the approaching mob, and he asks them, "Whom do you seek?" And they answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." And look at the response of Jesus in verse 5. Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. At the word of Jesus, all of this could end. He could have put them to the ground, kept them on the ground, and walked away at this moment by simply his word. Jesus is the great I Am. That matchless name of God that we read of in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 14. Jesus then proceeded to ask again who they were seeking. It's really somewhat amazing that they did not change their answer. But their spirits were paralyzed by the hardness of sin that had affected their heart. They are not moved by the power that was displayed in the very words of Jesus. Instead, they again say that they are looking for Jesus. And even here in this darkest of hours, Jesus's concern is not for himself, much like it would be when he was on the cross and showed concern for his mother, even in his agony. He cared for his disciples. He did not want them to also be lost in this moment. Just as Jesus had declared earlier in chapter 17, notice verse 12. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in your name. Those whom you gave me, I have kept, and none of them is lost except the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. But Peter was unwilling at this moment to yield. And so we find that Peter then draws his sword and he strikes the servant of the high priest and he cuts off his ear. Notice verses 10 and 11. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" Jesus is not going to resist at this moment. He is submitting to the will of the Father. Now the response of Peter here is quite absurd for a couple of reasons. Consider now, first here, notice who Peter is up against. He is facing this huge crowd of people carrying torches and weapons. On a physical level, there is no way that these 11 disciples are going to win in combat against a band of soldiers and officers. Unless Jesus was to deem it so. And so here, Peter has forgotten to remember Jesus' mission. He fails to recall what Jesus had prophesied with his own words about this very moment. Jesus is focused on the plan of God. Peter is misguided. And though well-intentioned, he is resisting the plan of God. There is a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is death, the prophet Jeremiah told us. And so now as we move forward, we consider now the sham of a trial that Jesus would face and the denial of his beloved disciple Peter. Verse 12. Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest, and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. And so with this, Jesus Christ, the divine Son of God, allows himself, and notice I said allows himself, to be bound and arrested. We see Jesus here completely yielding to the plan of God, while Peter is fighting the plan of God. And so, upon his arrest, Jesus is first led to Annas, who is the rightful high priest. The Romans deposed Annas in 15 AD and made Caiaphas, Annas' son-in-law, the high priest from 18 through 36 AD. The Jews evidently still recognized the religious authority of Annas. In fact, the historian Josephus called Annas the high priest even after the time that the Romans had removed him. John reminds us of Caiaphas' words in chapter 11, verses 49 through 51. Chapter 11, verses 49 through 51. And one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish." Now this he did not say on his own authority, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. Caiaphas declared that it was better that one die for the people. The point is that there is not going to be a fair trial coming from Caiaphas or even the Sanhedrin court. Now, rather than continuing to follow Jesus at this point, John now turns our attention back to Peter. Now, Peter, along with another disciple, followed Jesus to the courtyard of the high priest. We're told that Peter waits outside. Now, remember, just a short time earlier, Peter had declared that he was willing to give his life for Jesus. In fact, he had been willing to fight against overwhelming odds in the garden. But now, think back to what Peter said in chapter 13, in verse 37, in response to Jesus. Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake." Peter believed that he was ready to give his life for Jesus and his kingdom. Words are often more easily said than done, especially when those words are put to the test. And so, when a servant girl at the door identifies Peter as one of Jesus' disciples, Peter immediately denied any association with Jesus. Now back to Jesus, as John continues, we see the high priest is questioning Jesus. And Jesus points out during this interrogation that they had had plenty of opportunities to gather any information they wanted about Jesus. Jesus was never deceptive. They could ask anyone and they could tell you what Jesus taught and said. Jesus is simply making the point here that Annas has all the information that he needs to have. Now here, Jesus seems to be rebuking the high priest because of the fact that he should have had witnesses for the trial. But there are no witnesses. So Jesus points this out and asks that they bring in people to ask what he has said. And with this rebuke of the high priest, an irate officer strikes Jesus. Again, it would do us well to think about how Jesus could have retaliated in anger at this point. Think about all of the things he could have done at this moment for being hit in the face. He could have called 10,000 angels right here well before the cross. Instead, Jesus, again, notice the wording here, allows himself to be taken to Caiaphas for another trial. Now John is going to turn our attention back to Peter again, who is going to two more times adamantly declare that he is not a disciple of Jesus. And the cock would crow three times. Now, John takes our attention to the scene of the Roman trial. Let's pick up again in verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go in to the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you." Then Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." Therefore, the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die." Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priest have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all." So now Jesus is being led to Pilate, who is the governor over this region at the time. Now normally Pilate lived in Caesarea Maritima, but during the Passover he would stay in Jerusalem to help maintain the peace. Notice the irony in verse 28. They would not enter the governor's headquarters because they did not want to become defiled and not be able to eat the Passover. How much more defiled could they be when desiring to kill the Messiah? Verse 28, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Here, these hypocrites are concerned about not being defiled by not entering into a Gentile's home. But yet they have no qualms about murdering an innocent person. Pilate comes out to them again and asks them what their charge is against this man. And listen now to their response in verses 29 and 30. Pilate then went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. They do not have a charge to give Pilate. But think about what they just said. They said he is doing evil. Of all the people this could be said about, they are accusing the one person that no one could ever honestly say that about. Now make no misunderstanding, Pilate could care less about their problem. But it is evident here that the Jewish leaders do not have any serious charge to bring against Jesus, that they can judge him according to their own laws. And so the Jews respond to Pilate that it's not lawful for them to put anyone to death. This is an interesting statement here. The death penalty was in the hands of the Romans. But there's much more to this statement than meets the eye. During the time of Herod, the Jews were allowed to handle most of their criminal cases, particularly in regards to their own law. And this is what Pilate would say in chapter 19 in verse 6. There it says, therefore, when the chief priest and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, you take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. We know that the Jewish leaders had the power to judge according to their own law. For don't forget that in Acts chapter 8, they would stone Stephen. They will threaten death to the apostles. They will persecute the Christians in the book of Acts. In fact, a man named Saul of Tarsus would be among that number who would become the beloved Apostle Paul. Even if one was to try to argue that the Jewish leaders could not give the death penalty, which history and the scriptures show that they could, Pilate just gave them the authority to deal with Jesus however they wished. So why don't the Jewish leaders take Jesus and stone him? The only possible explanation for this is that they did not want to be responsible for the death of Jesus Christ. This is why they would arrest him at night. They would not do it in the days before the in the daytime before the eyes of the people. They were well aware of the popularity of Jesus, and they did not want to lose their influence with the people. So they want the death of Jesus to be at the hands of the Romans and not themselves. This is why the Jewish leaders continue to push Pilate, urging him to execute Jesus throughout the trial. But now notice verses 31 and 32. Then Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." Therefore the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die." All of these events are still within the predetermined plan of God. Jesus was going to die on a tree. That was a Roman punishment, and not from stoning, as the Jews would have done. Pilate now takes Jesus into his office or headquarters for interrogation. Pilate asks Jesus if he is the king of the Jews. And look at the response of Jesus. Jesus asked a question to Pilate's question. "Do you legitimately want to know, or are you just accepting the Jewish charge against me?" is what he's basically saying. Pilate's response is that he does not care about the affairs of the Jews. Notice verse 35. Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priest have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Now Pilate here is not rubber stamping the Jews' hostility toward Jesus. He asks, "What have you done?" Jesus tells Pilate that he is not anyone that Pilate needs to be concerned about. He's not a political threat. This is the only concern the Romans would have. What Jesus says is really the theme of the whole chapter here that John is trying to get across to us. "My kingdom is not of this world." Jesus is the king whose purpose is to testify to the truth. The voice of Jesus is the truth. Those who listen to Jesus belong to the truth, to him and his kingdom. But Pilate sees that their discussion is going nowhere. This is something that has been repeated throughout John's gospel. But so many people fail to understand and believe. Pilate chooses to stay with just a surface knowledge of Jesus. He is not willing or interested enough to dig deeper, to learn about Jesus, to learn and believe the truth of that he speaks about. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world." The easy, typical choice for people is to have their kingdom belong to this world. Man today, the great, great majority put their hope in this world, Peter, at that moment, was more interested in preserving his life than focusing on the plan of God, on the kingdom that Jesus is about to bring into existence. It is so easy to live for just today. It is so easy just to live for the world that is around us. It is easy to put our hope in this life. Are you willing to dig deeper and learn and believe the truth of Jesus? Do you want to live life for the eternal kingdom rather than for this broken, dying world? Jesus' kingdom is not of this world. Where is our kingdom? Where is your hope? Where is your joy? When you deny Jesus, it's not only saying that you're not a disciple of Christ, but you're denying Jesus means that you're living for this world rather than for his kingdom. It is putting your hope in this life. To deny Jesus is to follow your plan rather than the plan of God. And John shows that to us at this point in the life of Peter and Pilate. They are following their own plans. They're trying to save their own lives. They're not willing and submitting to the plan and the purpose of God. Ask yourself today, where is your hope? Where is your kingdom? Have you put it in the world around you? Or in the truth of the matchless eternal one? It's a vitally important question with eternal consequences. Thank you for joining me today. Our time is up. Next week, if the Lord wills, we move into chapter 19 if we're together. I look forward to seeing you. Until we meet again, this is Chris saying so long. May God bless you and have a great day.